Welcome to the conference. This call is being recorded. You may now begin.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is Lauren Ritchie from the National Quality Forum. And you have called into today's ESRD Steering Committee conference call to review the public and member comments received on the ESRD measures. We will open the call today briefly with just a roll call of the Steering Committee members, and then we will go on to review the agenda briefly and get right into reviewing the comments. So for the committee members present on the call, just really briefly, I know Peter Crooks is on the call.
Hello.
Christine Saunders on the call. Connie Anderson?
Here.
I know Sue Barnes will not be able to make it today. Jeff Burns? No Jeff Burns. Barbara Favish? Not yet. Jerry Jackson?
Present.
Thank you. Rick Caskell? Not yet. Myra Kleinpeter? Not yet. I know Alan Kleiger will not be able to join us. Lisa Latt? And Kathy LeBeau?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. I know Jonelli is on the call already. Andrew Narva will not be able to make it. Jesse Pavlinek?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Bob Provenzano?
Here.
Joe Vassilotti? Ruben Velez?
Here.
Thank you. Roberta Wager? Not yet. And Harvey Wells?
I'm here.
Thank you. And I know a few committee members will be joining us late. Here at the NQF, we have Karen Pace, Lauren Ritchie, and Tanae Davenport. Just really briefly, before I turn the call over to the co-chairs, I just wanted to go over a few logistics for the webinar today. We will be showing several documents on the webinar, and in order for you to see them as large as you can and to be able to read the text on them, I will ask that you, one, in the upper right-hand corner of the webinar, just make sure that you have your screen maximized. Just click on maximize and or click on actual size once I have either a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet, and that will allow you to see all of the comments just as I display them. And also for the steering committee members, if you could just remember to reference the comments number that you are referring to, that will help us as well as the audience follow along with those specific comments. With that, I will turn it over to Dr. Crooks and Dr. Schauner for comments.
Well, good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, depending on where you're located. Thanks for calling in. This is another important phase of our work as a steering committee. And we have quite a lot of comments to go through today. Christine, do you have any other comments?
No, I'm not going to add anything so we can get started.
Okay. I guess we need to do a roll. Well, we've done a roll call, right? So we know who's here.
Okay.
And, Lauren, do we need to review the purpose of the call any further?
No, I think that's it for now. I think what I want to do is actually open up the call to the committee now just to see everyone has had a chance to at least review the comments. And I just want to make sure that there weren't any other priority topic areas or measures that the committee wanted to discuss or felt that the full committee should review before we go ahead and get started. Otherwise, we will follow the format of the memo that was forwarded to the steering committee of a few areas that we have identified here at NQF. So if there are any other priority issues or measures that any of the steering committee members want to bring forward, please do so now.
Well, this is Peter Crooks. I think we just need to make sure that we have time to review the comments on phosphorus, of which there are quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
I presume we'll get to that, and I'm not saying it should be at the top of the agenda, but that we make sure that we have time to consider those.
Yes, absolutely. That's on the agenda.
Anyone else? Okay.
Okay, with that, I am going to turn it over to Karen Pace, and she will get us started on the first kind of overarching theme that we identified here at NQF, and that's looking at the target population for some of the measures.
Okay, and Lauren, do you want to put up for the webinar that section of the memo for those that the public that are following along?
Yes, it's coming up now.
Okay. So one of the things that we had identified as we were going through the comments is tried to identify, you know, some themes or recurring comments. And there's one area that came up in a variety of ways, and that was expanding the target population for various measures. And the first set of these specifically addressed suggestions to include home hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis patients in the measure unless the evidence required exclusion. And this applies to frequency of adequacy measurement for pediatric hemodialysis patients, which is number 1418, measure 1424, monthly hemoglobin measurement for pediatric patients, 1433, use of iron therapy, 1438, periodic assessment of post-dialysis weight by nephrologists, and 1454, proportion of patients with hypercalcemia. So I thought I know the committee discussed this a bit during the meeting and subsequently, and we had some exchange with the measure developer about it, but I thought since this came up in several of the comments for several of the measures that it might be something to just get your thoughts about, to see what your thinking is, and then we can also ask the measure developer if there are any issues with that. But I'll stop there and ask for the committee to make any comments.
This is Peter Crooks. Do you want us to indicate that we want to speak on the webinar necessarily or not?
No, I think right now I think you could just speak up on the call. You don't have to indicate that on the webinar. If
okay.
We start having problem taking care of it, making sure everyone gets recognized, we can go to the webinar. But
okay. Very good. I would like to say a couple things. I think, first of all, the general comment that as a steering committee, we can only consider what the developers have submitted. So that for most of these, if it wasn't submitted that way, it isn't within our purview to expand the denominator of these metrics. But one of these, I think it was the hypercalcemia 1454, the developer responded that as reported in the denominator statement, the measure applies to adult hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis patients treated. So I guess rather than making a change, what the developer is saying, in fact, this does include that group. So that's just a clarification, not a change, right?
But I wonder if I have to look at those specifications, if that is restricted to in-center. I think that was how some of them are. So, and let me just make a clarification. Obviously, the measures were submitted one way, and as you said, the committee does not generally engage in measure development or measure construction, but, this is something that could be discussed and recommended, and obviously we'd have to have some discussion with the developer, so it's not totally off the table
okay.
If it seems to be indicated,
mm-hmm.
But we will look at that real quick.
Okay, other comments on this?
It's Joe Nally, Peter. I guess my concern at first blush, one could say, well, sure, I guess that would apply. But my concern is that I'd like to hear more from the developers make sure we're not overlooking something major here or unintended consequences. We spent a lot of time going over each of these measures with a full discussion, which is now 4 months ago. I just feel like there's a half a dozen different measures that might be altered with a quick yes without giving it its full due. So is there some information that we could hear from the measure developers that might have thought about this in a little more detail?
Sure. Tom Dudley from CMS is on. And, Tom, do you want to respond to that? And, Lauren, I don't know if you want to bring up the spreadsheet for any particular comment, but because I know CMS did respond to some of these comments. So, Tom,
would it be okay if I had Bob Wolf weigh in on this? Bob, you're on, correct?
I am. This is Bob Wolf. Thank you all very much. There are two issues generally that might have led to exclusions. One is data availability, and another is appropriateness for the population. So some of those are medical issues, which were brought to our attention by our TEPS, basically, and the other are data availability, which we are aware of working with the data sources. I wonder if it would be better, and I just offer this as a suggestion, to do this measure by measure, because there may be different issues for certain measures than for others.
I think that's a good idea.
I agree.
Okay, that sounds good. So, Lauren, do you want to so perhaps we should first talk about measure 1418? Frequency of adequacy measurement for pediatric hemodialysis patients.
Hi, this is Joe Vasilati. I joined late. I apologize.
Okay.
Welcome.
So,
okay.
So in this one, I'm going to tell you what's in the current specifications. The denominator is pediatric patients receiving in-center hemodialysis.
Okay.
So, obviously, this one is specifically for hemodialysis, not peritoneal dialysis. And then it's restricted to in-center.
Are any of the pediatric nephrologists on the call?
Barbara Fivish, I think, said she wasn't going to be able to make it, and has Rick Caskell joined us?
But didn't Barb send her comments, didn't she?
Oh, yes. She did.
I was just going to call. This is Jesse Pavlenak, and I think and the nephrologist would certainly have to confirm this, but the incidence in anything but in-center hemodialysis for pediatric patients, I think, is pretty low. I mean, it's not a big population like, you know, that perhaps it is in adults. So I'm not sure it's even much of a point for this particular measure for including other than in-center. But, again, I would defer to them if they were on.
This is Connie Anderson, and I think that comment is very true. And if I remember rightly from the discussion we had at the steering committee meeting, the population numbers were so very small, and most of them dialyzed more than thrice weekly, and therefore the single pole KT over V may not be an appropriate standard for the home hemodialysis pediatric population.
Lauren, can you highlight the response? Because I think we have a developer response, if you would move your, so we could see that. Okay. Okay, and that the Bob, your position is this should remain to be just the in-center hemodialysis patients.
Yes. Part of the issue has to do with data availability and the frequency of dialysis. In order to be appropriate, the single pool is designed for thrice weekly. And in order to identify thrice weekly, we literally look at the claim line items and count the number of dialysis sessions being delivered on the claims in order to screen out those that have more than thrice weekly.
Okay. So maybe so we can move on. Any other comments by the steering committee? Any disagreement with the leaving it as specified?
Again, it's Joe Nally. I have no disagreement with leaving it as specified, but there was in another half page or so another item directly related to this and others as to what constitutes a measure. Is that something we want to talk about? In other words, just measuring this, a frequency?
Yes, we'll get to that. We'll address that issue separately. That's a good point. We wanted to specifically talk about the target population, and then you're right, there were several questions.
Happened to be the next sentence down. That's all.
Right, right. So maybe the most efficient way to get through this is to identify if there are any of these measures listed that that you want to speak about. Well, let's just go on to the next one, 1424,
right.
Monthly hemoglobin measurement for pediatric patients. And I will tell you here in a moment.
There's a developer response in the notes already, too.
Okay, and Lauren, you want to go to that one? This one currently is, I believe this is not restricted. It says all pediatric hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis patients. Oh, yes, the exclusion is patients who are not in the facility. So first, let's just clarify with CMS that this measure is also intended for just patients in the center being receiving their treatment in the center. Bob or Tom?
Yes, that is the intent, and
okay.
It's for the same reason.
Okay.
But there's some language about that it could be misconstrued slightly, and I think that was addressed in the developer's comments.
Okay.
So I think it, in actuality, measures the group that the comment wants measured. The commenters want measured.
I'm sorry, Peter, could you say that again?
So my interpretation is that there was a comment that was a slight modification in the denominator statement about which patients should be excluded. And I think the developers answered that adequately.
Okay.
And in fact, it will, in effect, give the same result.
All right. We'll look at that one separately. And that's been addressed. Lauren, this particular comment isn't about the home patients, but... are there any comments from the steering committee that regarding whether this measure should be considered for home patients or a monthly?
This does include home patients, as I read it.
No, the developer just clarified it does not. It's excluding patients who are not in the facility.
Well,
it includes centers, patients who are in the center, but that can include PD patients if
right.
they are in center.
Right. It includes peritoneal, and it definitely hemodialysis and peritoneal, but only those who are receiving their treatment in the center. Is that correct? Not home patients?
No. The term in-center is unfortunate there, because that would seem to indicate that the treatment is given in-center, where what it means, I think, is that the patients are followed and managed by that center. PD is, I don't know that PD is given in-center to pediatric patients. I don't think so.
Karen or Lynn?
Yes,
this dates back to my pediatric nephrology days. There are instances where the peritoneal dialysis is provided in-center with the pediatric population, at least dating back 10 years ago when I left clinical practice. You're correct that most peritoneal dialysis is home treatment, but there are instances, especially with the neonate population, where it's done in-center because of some of the technical challenges with the small children.
Yeah, this is Bob Robinzano. You're absolutely right. I think almost all the programs do have a few patients that are done on some schedule PD in the center. So, again, the numbers are very small, but I do know that it's true. It's true in our program.
So I think the question is, if patients are followed by a facility but not receiving their treatment in the facility, should they also be getting a monthly hemoglobin measurement?
So the answer to that is yes, but is that what was intended by the developers or not? That's what we don't know.
Well, they're on the line. Tom Dudley from CMS and Bob Wolf from Arbor. And at this, my understanding of what you just said previously is that the intent is not to include patients on either home hemodialysis or home peritoneal dialysis.
And this is Bob Wolf. The constraint is not that it would be inappropriate. I think we agree that it would be appropriate to measure it. It's the availability of data for those patients.
So just so we understand, so even though home patients are followed by a facility, they're not required to enter any data into Crown Web for patients that are on home therapy? Is that?
That will be different for Crown Web when the measure is based upon Crown Web, I believe, but that would be better for Tom to respond to.
Bob, your statement is correct for the Crown Web. But some of the issue with the home patients, they're not necessarily followed on a month. They're not seen on a monthly basis within the center, so there may not be a monthly value.
But in the pediatric population, I think it's more likely. But they follow them much more closely because of growth and developmental issues than in the adults.
That's correct. They come in almost weekly, so as opposed to adults who may miss the monthly cycle. So I that's true.
Okay.
So is there a way we can ask the developer to check the date? Well, this is going to be Crown Web data, right? So it's not coming in yet.
So we can't. Crown Web data is not coming in yet.
No.
Not nationally. So
you can't tell us right now whether that will be coming in, or you really expect it will come in? Because
we expect it to be coming in for 100% of the patient population.
Right. So why exclude them then? Because it sounds like the expectation is that they'll usually be measured at least monthly, and if they're not, they should be measured monthly. Is that what our pediatric nephrologists believe? That monthly would be a minimum?
Barbara and Rick are not on the call, Peter.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we can we'll follow up with that. I guess at a minimum, well, I guess one of the things that also could be recommended is that when these measures come forward for endorsement maintenance, that you know the home patients be included wherever it's unless it's contraindicated by the evidence, but it sounds like on that one, which is just a monthly hemoglobin measurement, it sounds like there's not a lot of rationale to not include them at this point.
That's what I'm hearing. Unless their TEP had scientific reasons not to, I don't see why they should be excluded.
Okay, well, we can move on to the next one, 1433, use of iron therapy for pediatric patients. And we'll get back to a couple of these also regarding the comment about CKD, but so, Lauren, do we have one of the comments? Let me tell you right now what's in the denominator. So this is for all pediatric hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis patients in the facility.
There was a comment about extending it to stage 3, 4, CKD stage 3 and 4.
Right.
Is that why this one hits your list?
Yeah, it's next on our list about the CKD patients, but this was also commented. There was also comments about restricting this to patients in the center.
I see. Okay, so this is the same logic as we just went through on the last one?
It seems like it would be, but we're just kind of seeing measure by measure if there are any different issues. Okay, so it sounds like this would follow the same logic we were just talking about. Any comments specifically about that one? Anything from Tom or Bob Wolf about home patients with use of iron therapy?
Bob Wolf, the only issue would be data availability, and if the data are available, they should be included. We agree.
Right. Okay. So we can follow up with you specifically on these and see what the potential options are. The next one where there were also some comments about home patients was 1438, periodic assessment of post-dialysis weight. And that one currently the denominator is patient in an outpatient dialysis facility, chronic maintenance, hemodialysis. So, again, it appears that this is restricted to in-center hemodialysis patients.
Now, in comment 46, the developers respond that we agree that it would be clinically meaningful to extend this to home or peritoneal dialysis patients and not restrict it to thrice-weekly hemodialysis. So is that signaling that the developers are okay with adding that group in?
Lauren, would you put that comment
yeah,
number 46 up?
Yes, it's up now.
And the draft response? Yeah.
Tom or Bob?
Yes, that would be all right.
Oh, to both home and peritoneal dialysis patients. Okay. All right. Any comments from the steering committee?
No, that's reasonable.
Yeah. Okay. And then
this is Rick Tesco. No one could hear me before for some reason, and I had comments, and I was talking to myself. But
all right.
On the pediatric issues, I want to just echo what everyone said, and also there are a few patients from time to time in the very young age group that actually stay in the hospital for long periods of time on peritoneal dialysis until we have effectively trained them, and sometimes they have to come in for retuning, et cetera. And we do follow the hemoglobins very closely. Obviously, this is something we pay attention to very frequently.
Okay, thank you. Operator, would you make sure all the lines are open then? We thought you had already opened all the lines. So.
Yes, all the lines are open.
Okay, thank you. All right, glad you got to us, Rick.
Thank you, thank you.
And then the last measure in this discussion about home patients is 1454, the hypercalcemia measure.
Karen, this is Jerry Jackson. Can we go back to the post-dialysis weight assessment? There was another comment, or several people made this comment, that the way it's currently written, it requires a new prescription each month, and it was suggested that it be reworded to require a statement that it's been assessed and either changed or not changed.
Yeah, that was changed, Jerry, when during our meeting. I think we had language clarification, and I think the commenter hadn't seen the latest version.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Right. The the measure language, it stayed new prescription, but it said irregardless of change. So let me just find that for you.
It's comment number 30.
Okay. Yeah, we 1438. So basically it now says that the numerator is documentation of receiving a new post-dialysis weight prescription, irrespective of whether or not a change in post-dialysis weight prescription was made. So,
and that's what we voted on.
Right. Now, Lauren, I think CMS also provided some comment to that or not.
Not to this specific comment, but
okay. All right.
This was something that the committee had already addressed, so we did not forward it.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Any other comments about that? I think there was also a comment of, you know, just wanting documentation of assessment versus a prescription. But CMS had come back with this particular response to the committee's concerns about the confusion, and this is what the committee had voted on. So unless there's any other concerns, we can move on.
So we're moving to 1454, Karen?
Right. So this was another one about home patients, and again, the denominator is hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis patients treated at the dialysis facility. The question was raised of should that be treated by the facility, meaning it would include home patients. Lauren, do we have a comment about, or so I'll ask CMS and Arbor if you have any comments about home patients for this measure.
Right, and that's comment number 119. It's highlighted on the screen now.
Okay.
For the draft response.
Okay, so that's green.
Right. So the comment was that it does apply to peritoneal dialysis patients treated at the outpatient dialysis facility. And
so this is the same.
Go ahead.
Well, this is the same type of issue, I think. Is there any reason from a scientific point of view to exclude patients dialyzing at home? And or was it a concern about data availability? And if it's the latter, maybe we could seek to include them if the data is coming in.
That's it. This is Bob Wolf. That's exactly right. This is, again, related to the data availability issue. And my understanding from our medical advisors was that it would be appropriate to include them, and this constraint was there because of data availability. If it is possible to access those data, then they would be included. The intent of saying at the center was to include everybody for whom we have data. That's, in a sense, a code language that is being used there.
And I think the commenter was saying it would be more accurate if you would say by the center rather than at the center.
Yes.
So I know it's just a minor word, but it conveys a little bit different. So it seems like you're on board that if they have the data, they would be included.
The denominator statement could be amended to something like all dialysis patients managed or followed at or by a center whose data is available on Crown Web. Would that satisfy everybody then?
Okay, well, we can follow up with CMS about these and just if there are any clarifications that might help, we can get those into the specifications.
Okay.
It would be nice to harmonize this, since I think it's entirely the same discussion with the calcium and the hemoglobin.
Right, right. Yes, it is. As you go through these, the denominator and exclusions, there's some slight differences in how they're worded, and so that would be nice to have those the same wherever it's appropriate.
Because conceptually, clinically, there's absolutely no difference.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So,
Karen, this is Connie Anderson. There was another comment about also specifying that this was a pre-dialysis serum calcium, and it should be specified as that in the measure.
Okay.
And the developer's comment, they agree with that. I think it's in the same comment on number 119. So we appreciate the recommendations and agree that pre-dialysis serum calcium should be specified in the measure title and the description. So that can be changed that way.
Right.
Peter, does that mean to say that all of our requirements for blood work need to be restated, that they're pre-dialysis laboratory studies? I mean, whether it's hemoglobin or potassium or whatever
I'm not sure we want to go back on every one that we've done and make that clarification. Maybe it's understood that's the usual practice.
Yeah, I mean, that is the normal practice.
I don't know why I'm making an exception for calcium.
Yeah, I was going to say, drawing calciums is routine with just all the other labs, which is pre-dialysis. That's fairly standard. So either we remove it from that, or I guess we're obligated to say it everywhere else.
And I think based on the CMS session on Wednesday, there was concern about it being specified, that it should be specified as pre-dialysis, and anemia was included in that part of the discussion. So I think there is concerns out there for consistency's sake that we're all drawing it at the same point and then having valid data that we're comparing apples to apples versus apples to oranges if people are drawing in particular hemoglobin at different times.
I guess my only comment would be that is an awfully prescriptive recommendation, and although I don't disagree with it because it tends to be the standard, what precisely is the reasoning or the data that that this now needs to be stated?
He said he would help. This is Ruben. I definitely agree that because this is the standard, that I don't think there's any need to restate this on every single measure. But, again, there may be some information we don't know about.
So, Tom or Bob, do you have a thought about it? I mean, I understand what the committee's saying is, you know, if you do it for one, it seems like you need to do it for all, or is that a standard? Or
actually, does Crown Web specify when blood work need be obtained?
Not to my knowledge.
No.
It just has the value in there.
Yeah, and I think the silence on that is that it typically is a clinical standard to draw. It's pre-treatment blood draws is pretty much standard, but I'm not sure if we can say that 100% of the time.
And, you know, we know that, but somebody from a health plan looking at the metric may not know that. It seems to me we have an opportunity during this year now to maybe add that clarification as we're reviewing metrics again for continuation. And maybe that's something we should think about, putting in all the laboratory measures. When is the blood drawn?
Well, you know, if we get there, then you become very prescriptive because then as we all know, then you can really say, well, do you do it at the beginning of the week or do you do it at the end of the week? Do you do it in midweek? And that may change some of the parameters, and I'm not sure, you know, if we want to get to that detail.
Right. But pre-treatment wouldn't specify that level. It doesn't matter which treatment during the week. It's just that it should occur before versus after, right? Is that what the issue is? Or?
Yeah, that's the issue, but the standard is to do it before. And, again, my fear is the policing of this. And then you're talking about state regulators looking at this. How are we going to prove we're doing it? I mean, I just worry that it's an unnecessary burden, is overly prescriptive, maybe misinterpreted by state regulators, and is going to, I just think, send the wrong message. I do think that every provider in the U.S. is trying to do the right thing, collect the appropriate data, et cetera, and that they'll view this as an overreach, and I just don't know if it's worth, you know, going to the mat for.
So the rest of the committee, do you have we have two options. One is to let this be specified in all the lab measures. The other is, since that's the standard of care, that it doesn't need to be specified in the measures. But I'm hearing it really doesn't make sense to specify in one of the lab measures and not the other.
I mean,
I think we all like to see consistency, I'm kind of neutral on it. I don't know are there other committee members who feel strongly one way or the other?
Well, let me weigh back in since I brought it up. So calcium shouldn't be separated out. We all agree on the consistency. But the other thing is there's a standard of care, and there have been NQF measures related to dialysis for a number of years, and if it's never required to say pre-dialysis, I agree with Bob. I wouldn't rock the boat and look like we're being overly obsessive about this unless there were lots of other questions across the board as to when things were drawn. I think it's a given that your pre-dialysis lab.
Okay.
Karen?
Yes.
This is Tom. May I
definitely
just make a comment? By stating pre or post or with this, would it virtually handcuff us if there were research that came out that said that perhaps you should draw the blood post-treatment?
Well, you'd obviously want to have that change made, and that's something that could change pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
I think that to respond to the prior comment, the prior ESRD measures, to my recollection, did not specify pre-dialysis, you know, that the labs were drawn pre-dialysis. So why don't we, it sounds like, and we can follow up by email with the committee just to make sure that, you know, we do have.
And my sense of it is, Karen, that the committee is not really moving in that direction, that we should amend all of the language, and that we should probably leave this one alone and not specify. And I think that's the feeling of the committee right now, unless others here have want to voice other opinions.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the next three, I think we can handle pretty closely, quickly. There was some comment about the hemoglobin measures or the anemia measures should also include CKD stage 3 and 4. And I'll just make a general comment. Obviously, these measures were submitted to NQF for consideration just based on the ESRD dialysis patients, or the ESRD patients. The call for measures did not restrict measures only include ESRD patients if a particular measure or focus was applicable to chronic kidney disease. But regardless, these measures were submitted this way, and CMS basically hadn't even considered including the CKD patients in their measure development. So that would be a fairly substantial change that is probably not appropriate in the time frame we're currently working on. And Tom, I don't know if you want to say anything more about that from CMS's standpoint, but it sounds like you really want these measures for ESRD patients at this point in time.
Yeah, the focus right now from a CMS perspective is on the ESRD population, and also ties into data availability. We do have, right now we're using claims data, and we will be using Crown Web, which is inclusive of ESRD patients, but not CKD. In the earlier stages.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that settles the matter pretty strongly. You know, the data collection is only on dialysis patients, so we can't, even if we'd like to. And I think you can, for as a general comment between CKD and dialysis patients, you know, these patients, there is a difference. You know, patients not on dialysis, there's one set of considerations, and patients on dialysis, it changes the, you know, the landscape enough that I think that justifies saying, you know, these have to be considered separately.
Peter, to use your analogy before, there's kind of two issues. One's data availability, and then the other is the science of the question. And in both cases here, it's a no. The data is widely available, and CKD patients are different than the ESRD anemia management.
Okay.
So we'll craft the responses to include that.
And I would include that for all times it comes up, you know, rather than reinventing the wheel. Peter, I think you're right on.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, Lauren, do you want to pick up on the discussion about the measures that we received comments on about not meeting NQF criteria? You want to?
So this goes back to the point that Dr. Nally brought up earlier about some of the frequency and method measures not providing information on whether the data values actually themselves are capturing, I'm sorry, whether or not the information or whether data are being used in a way that actually will improve dialysis treatment, and that they only provide information on whether or not the center recorded the patient's values or data, and that having the measures
or having the data themselves is not necessarily important, and like as Karen mentioned, does not meet the NQF criteria. So I don't know how we want to do this, if we want to take this one measure at a time, or do we just want to kind of consider the group of measures as they're listed there in its totality and see how the committee wants to respond to this.
Well, I can start off. I would prefer, you know, I don't think that we need to go through this measure by measure. I think it's a general comment, and we can discuss it that way. I would say, too, that in the comments, the draft comments I read, I think you responded very well to these. Who was about to speak then?
It was Joe. To me, this is the exact discussion we had meeting whether or not the simple tracking or measurement consistent with a measure. And I think Rick and Barbara thought that PEDS was different, and therefore this was the first step of the equation. So, I mean, I'd really be interested in what Rick has in terms of the measure.
Connor, someone is typing on their keyboard and it's coming through pretty loud. So if you aren't speaking, could you please mute if you can? Thank you.
Thanks. Rick, will this move the field forward?
Hello?
We hear you now.
Hello?
Yes.
We still have Rick on the line?
Yes. Hi. Okay. There you go. Intermittently on and off. Can we just rephrase that again so I make sure we have the right response here?
Yeah, Rick, it's Joe. What I said was this, the last sentence here, you know, says it's an important step, but the data don't set the bar particularly very high, which was our discussion in Washington.
Right. That's right.
And so hearing those comments, what's the pediatric nephrology response? Is this worth the effort to start here?
Right. On this last one. Hold on, I'm just rebooting.
Well, it's about pretty much about all of the measures that are just about the frequency or method of measurement. And I think some of the Joe's right. This was a discussion at the in-person meeting, and I think there were two things that came up. And as Joe mentioned, there was discussion that this was a new area of measurement, and the committee thought
right.
Be better to err on the side of these measures than not to have the measures.
Correct.
And then I think the other thing, at least for some of these, even though I think the committee agreed that they were a pretty low bar, is that CMS had presented data that they weren't even being done. And so I think the two things in combination kind of swayed the committee to go ahead and recommend them. But
That's correct. I agree.
If you have, does the committee still feel that way, or anything else to add to that? I guess.
And when we sent this around for review, we didn't get that much new additional information either.
And I think it really was. We've got to start somewhere. So let's start, and then we can always, as we collect data and get more information, make changes. But it's a starting point, and I think that's the basis of the comments.
This is so little. I'm remembering now that there is so little out there.
Right.
That right. This is what Barbara and I were trying to review again to everyone, that there isn't a lot of baseline data because we don't have it. And if you even want to make any changes, you need to start to accumulate. That was how we phrased this.
And I think also part of the discussion was we don't even know if people are measuring it on a routine basis. And
that's
so at least we will begin to get that kind of information and data as well.
That's why we went to this extent, because
yep.
It is an unknown. and it should allow us to gather, at least for the initial time period, some baseline data to interpret whether this should go forward further after the time is, you know, the allotment of time is over to readdress it.
I think that the steering committee position could be reflected in the comments back, or our response to comments, that the committee agrees that the more proximal outcome is, the more useful it is to those who are interested in the results. But in this case, after due consideration, we felt that this was a first step and better than not putting something in place.
You know, this is Bob, and I would like to broaden this out a bit because I absolutely agree, and Barb and I have had multiple conversations on this in other walks of life, and I think we've got to start somewhere. It's true. But the committee, as everybody knows, has gotten a lot of pushback on this phosphorus measure, particularly since in 2014 it's going to be in the bundle, and CMS may indeed include it. So if indeed we're going to go down the path with pediatrics, which I absolutely agree with, we may look schizophrenic by not giving a little bit of consideration to how we're going to deal with a starting point, quote-unquote, with a phosphorus measure, knowing full well that we don't have ample data for that, much like we don't have ample data on some of the other items we've discussed. So I just think we need to be sensitive to how we word things.
Okay. And just to... You know, there is a difference in the type of measure because the phosphorus was an actual level. These measures we're talking about right here were all about just doing the lab test versus...
That's true. No, absolutely true.
Right.
Is there a metric? I try to remember now from the original work, is there a metric in place before that phosphorus should be measured for adults?
I'm not sure.
Wasn't that part of the last steering committee's?
I think it is, but I'll try to look that up before we get to that measure, because that's definitely we want the committee to address. So I'll double check on that.
Yeah, if that's the case, then I think we can strengthen our logic by saying yes, indeed we're doing this for adults, but we haven't moved beyond it because lack of scientific evidence that lowering phosphorus changes outcomes.
Okay, I'll look that up and be able to tell you that by the time we get there. Okay. So, all right. Lauren, you want to let me just make a comment about the next two on our list, if that's okay, Lauren, and then I'll have you take over again. We did get some comments about harmonizing or combining with adult measures, specifically on method of adequacy measurement and minimum of the split KT over V. This also is something that the steering committee discussed, as you know, and it looked like some of the commenters picked up on the steering committee's recommendation or suggestion of if these were based on a standard KT over V versus the single pooled KT over V, that then you could do more with having all patients included, regardless of frequency, and have one measure that could be stratified for pediatric and adult. But CMS's response to the committee's question about that before we put this out for draft, this draft out for comment, was that they didn't feel that there was enough data and study right now to move to a standard KT over V. So I just wanted to mention that. It is some things that were commented on, but I don't know that there's really anything else to do at this point, but wanted to see if the committee wanted to address that again in any way.
I think your comments, responses to the commenters are very good on this, and I think the committee's position is that we would love it if we could have a standard KT over V and use that and replace it for all, throughout all the adequacy metrics, but it's not ready for prime time. Does the rest of the committee more or less agree with that or feel differently?
I agree with that, and I think that was part of the discussion again, that what may be appropriate for adults may not be appropriate for pediatric patients.
This is absolutely right. I mean, I'm voicing the same thing you're saying, but it's Rick. We're different. The kids are different. And,
yeah.
And we don't have the real answers in this when we deal with growth and development and needs that are completely different than in the adult population.
And I think that was the discussion at the steering committee, and that's why we didn't harmonize them with the adults.
And the preponderance of the commenters who commented on this issue of should pediatrics be harmonized with adults said no, they shouldn't, that they have to be considered separately, there were a few that thought otherwise, but I think most of them were favoring keeping them separate.
Okay, so Lauren, you want to move on then?
Yeah, so we'll move on to the measures, or other measures that just had kind of general comments that just on. Starting with 1463, hospitalization ratio for admissions, there were quite a few comments to recommend to include only those hospitalizations related to the outcomes of dialysis treatment, and that there were questions for the committee to reconsider or to carefully look at the calculation of the expected hospitalization rate. So that's a question for the committee. One, do you actually want to kind of go through that methodology and calculation? And two, whether that should be revised to include the outcomes of dialysis treatment for hospitalization?
Well, and let me just revise that just a bit. That would take a considerable rework of the measure to
right.
change the right. focus. And we can have CMS speak to that. But generally, trying to identify specific causes for admission becomes a very difficult issue in terms of reliability, at least in terms of many of the other measures we looked at for readmissions. But I'll ask CMS and Bob from Arbor to... And Lauren, I know that they send a response to that, but
sure.
So you may want to pull that up. But CMS or Bob, you want to speak to that issue?
This is Bob Wolf. I can speak to a couple of issues. There was a TEP which met about this, and the recommendation of the TEP was that the primary measure of overall hospitalization was appropriate. In addition, CMS, I know, is looking into specific hospitalization measures and is intending to convene a TEP to develop those. But as somebody just mentioned, that is a difficult and complicated issue having to do with a combination of balancing the quality of the data with the goals of coming up with appropriate measures. The advantage, I'll say, an advantage of the overall hospitalization rate is that we do have those data available in the claims very completely for Medicare patients, and we can count those hospitalizations, and it does represent an important aspect of the overall burden of disease for ESRD patients.
Bob, this is Joe Masana. I'd like to add that I recollect from the TEP deliberations when the SHR was being debated and cause-specific hospitalization came up, there was some concern expressed by several of the TEP members that as soon as you restrict to certain causes, you create potential incentives to affect coding, and that the general SHR, that was one of the advantages that several of the TEP members suggested for a general SHR rather than a cause-specific.
I think there's at least two issues that we've kind of taken on overlapping. One is the restriction of cases, and I think that's one of several strong arguments that you, it just isn't possible or correct to try to pull out those that are related to Lyme sepsis from other causes of hospitalization or ESRD related versus non ESRD related, and that's going down a path that leads to all sorts of unintended or extra consequences. The other set of comments that we started talking about here is the comments about, is this a valid methodology for standardized hospital days, and whether the steering committee should review the methodology. And I wanted to comment that it seems that that's beyond the ability of our steering committee. That's a very technical exercise, one that I would not be comfortable making a judgment on. I think the developers responded very well in one of their response to the commenters that this has been published, it's been reviewed in several ways, and from where I sit, I don't have any way to know absolutely for sure that this is a good or the best available method or that it's valid, but I think at this point I have to trust the developers and stay with and trust that the method is valid. But it is something that I can't say for sure. Do others have reservations about the methodology or concerns?
This is Connie again. I think we do need to go with the developers. This is way beyond, at least I'll speak for myself, my own expertise in the methodology in terms of deriving the values.
This is Karen. In the measure submission, the developer did report on the validation of their method, and I think, everything they reported was within norms of expectations for this type of measure. But certainly, since there were a couple of comments, we wanted to bring it to your attention to see if there were any issues that you wanted further information about or, clarification from the developer. We can certainly address that if the committee needs more information or more explanation.
The more information that was provided by Bob and Joe, to me, was very helpful to keep things just as it is.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree as well.
Yep.
Okay.
It sounds like we have consensus to keep it as it is for measure number 1463. Before we move into the measures that were not recommended, I just want to make one comment about number 1460, the bloodstream infection measure. There were a lot of positive comments about this measure. There were really no kind of large overarching issues or questions about this measure, so I think everyone is pleased with the two developers coming together for one measure. We don't have all the details yet, but we are hoping to work with CMS and CDC on that one combined measure. So now moving into measures not recommended, measure number 1427, the infamous phosphorus measure, as we've already touched upon a couple of times so far, there was just multiple comments for the committee to reconsider endorsement for this measure on the basis that the evidence is just as strong as for the hypercalcemia measure and as well as for the point that was brought up earlier that this measure may or may not be included in the 2014 requirement. So with that, I will open it up to the committee.
And this is Karen. I did look up, and Peter, your memory is great. We do have a measurement of serum phosphorus concentration that was endorsed in the project several years ago, and it's a measure that will be under endorsement maintenance review in the next phase of this renal project. So that measure does exist.
Okay, well, that's good.
I'm sorry, Peter. Go ahead, Peter.
The one brief comment I wanted to make is I don't buy the logic that because CMS has put this in the bundle, therefore we have to pass it. I mean, I am almost offended by that logic because, you know, that CMS is going to put what they want in the bundle or have, and they're going to measure what they think is important. They would love to have NQF validation or support for all of their metrics, but they're not going to have it. And to say that we have to act as a steering committee because CMS is going to do it is backwards logic.
Yeah, so Peter, I absolutely agree with you, and I'm trying to look at this conundrum because you're correct. CMS is going to do a lot of things that is important to them and is important for them to measure. That being said, facilities are going to be split with a lot of energy being spent on NQF approved measures for all the tight science that are required for approval. And in addition, those measures that for whatever reason CMS has, either financial or clinical, feel also needs to be measured. The question becomes, you know, where do we draw the line? Maybe this is a point to draw the line. There are many people out there that feel a little bit less strongly, as we've indicated, that there is some reasonable relationship between phosphorus and poor outcomes. Others disagree, but there is going to be a vehicle now to measure this. And much like we've argued for pediatrics, where a lot isn't known because there just isn't any data, the question I think that people raise reasonably, and this comes from across the board, is if there is not a requirement for 6 or 5.5 or whatever, how is that going to impact patients in as much as this product, this, you know, phosphate binders are going to be bundled? There's going to be a financial relationship between the use or the non-use and some number of a phosphorus. So I guess it becomes down to the preponderance of evidence, you know, kind of the O.J. Simpson argument that, you know, if we're going to operate in a criminal environment where you have to have evidence that's irrefutable or a preponderance of evidence as in a civil case, so be it. But I these conundrums make a lot of people uncomfortable, and I guess my only point is, would this be something, because it may negatively impact patients, if phosphoruses start floating up in an attempt to save money or who God knows what reasoning, because this will be a bundled drug. Is this something that we should, in a time-limited way, take a look at?
Bob, wouldn't you think that then we should look at this as a process measure, not an outcome measure?
A process measure would be fine.
Okay.
Well, we have a process measure, at least as far as phosphorus should be measured. What other process measure could there be?
It could be something about plan of action. It's just like the weight. It's just like the post-dialysis assessment of weight. It's just what assessment or... what did you do? This is we all know that this is a sticky point because in this measure, if it becomes a measure, this is a measure that the physician has only a small percent. I mean, the physician may be doing all the right things, but a lot depends on the patient, on the system, on the dietitian. It's not like adequacy of dialysis where I control the adequacy of dialysis, whether the patient shows up or not. That's a different thing. But on phosphorus, we all know what, you know, all the components of the phosphorus, aside from the science and the limited science. And
So if we decide on a process of what did you do to try to improve phosphorus versus just measuring phosphorus, that's one thing way we could look at it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt we could tighten it up. And I guess I'm just more or less speaking my mind because this is a conundrum to me. I am actually very concerned, as Ruben said, if there's no accountability to a number or to something we believe to be reasonably valid, the CMS is linking phosphorus to money. I mean, it's going to be in the bundle. So I don't know if that's going to have an impact. I just don't know.
I'm afraid there could be even a, if we were to pass this, it almost may lead to perverse or a reverse quality in that if by passing it, then there's an inclination to use more of the expensive phosphate binders, then there's less money available for other things. And maybe,
but not in a bundle environment. Not in a bundle environment, it's always going to be avoiding the use of an expensive medicine. That's my concern.
Jeff Burns, if I can weigh in, I apologize for joining the call late. I would like to, I guess, reinforce what a couple of others may have said, which is largely out of the control of the dialysis unit or the nephrologist. It's largely in the control of the patient. And there are potentially adverse consequences that could follow, namely just continuing to blindly add phosphate binders instead of attending to diet or to the dialysis prescription or dealing with a noncompliant patient by just simply prescribing phosphate binders, which may or may not improve this. So none of it really relates to quality. There's nothing really around phosphorus that relates to the quality of care provided by the dialysis facility or the nephrologists involved. And having said all that already, there's not any way to defend 6 as the right number.
Now, and Jeff, this is Bob, and I absolutely agree with you. Can't defend 6 or 5.5 or 6.5. But in a bundled environment, as opposed to what occurred in a non-bundled environment, where there's direct reimbursement for using expensive drugs, now the opposite is true. So the argument that a doctor or an LDO or somebody would be overutilizing a product, much like they accused many people with EPO, that flips on its head. And my only concern is if the opposite, if we're going to see phosphorus now floating up, because the less binder you use, the more you have left over in the bundle, and you know that it's going to be problematic from the other end. That's my concern.
Bob, this is Joe Vassalotti. I'm very concerned that we raise this logic. To me, this sounds almost perverse because we could start to make the argument that, well, you know, there's going to be a financial incentive for physicians to prescribe intravenous iron. This committee didn't pass the iron overload metric. There's going to be a financial incentive for physicians to shift care from the dialysis center to the emergency room to avoid the costs associated with intravenous antibiotic administration. Once you start talking about this as being the sole justification for performance measure, I think you're really opening a can of worms that we should not approach.
And I accept your argument. I'm trying to have an open conversation here, and I hate that slippery slope, but, you know, it was only a few months ago we had everybody in Congress pointing at doctors and LDOs and saying, you guys are purposely overusing this or that, period. And we all know it's not true. Maybe this isn't right, but this is going to be a bundled item that I can bet my bottom dollar CMS is going to require be measured. So I'm throwing it out there because we are getting heat and we're going to need a cogent argument.
We do have the performance measure that it's phosphorus is measured on a monthly basis. So CMS is already requiring that it be measured. The question is whether, you know, that something should be monitored or whether it should be turned into a performance measure at this greater than 6 level.
But let me make a specific comment there, because if you recall, I thanked you all for assigning me this measure originally, given how contentious it was. But the spectrum would be there is a measure in place that it should be measured, should be followed. Then we had discussion about what constitutes a performance measure, that level of science, as opposed to a clinical guideline. And then we have data available to the renal community, which gets reviewed in this contentious era by the KDIGO, and then a KDOKI commentary, which states point blank the data aren't sufficient for a CPM on phosphorus and PTH. And then we have a letter to us, lots of letters on this, but at least one of the ASN also weighing in that the evidence isn't there. So in my judgment, there will be lots of people with their own agendas and own concerns about what might happen, but right now there isn't sufficient evidence to tie you down to a six that makes morbidity and mortality better. We can all be faulted for not having this data in the well-done trials, but the bottom line is evidence-based medicine, rather than worrying about what CMS may do or this or that, some of the arguments that Peter and Joe Vassalotti already articulated. I mean, unfortunately, our hands are tied with a paucity of data and expert panels weighing in saying that the data do not permit the construction of a CPM. And there's no question there's going to be heat on this, but I think we're sitting in the appropriate seat having made the decision we did in Washington.
And this is Joe Vassalotti. I wanted to say one other thing, Bob, that I agree with you that monitoring patient safety in a bundled environment is a very important concern, but there may be other ways to do it besides performance measures.
No doubt. No, and again, I don't disagree with what's being said. I'm just trying to really get my arms around this. And although, Joe, I absolutely agree with you, one could make the same argument about much of what we've just said about standard hospitalization rates, you know, lack of control, lack of definition, et cetera, you know, lack of clarity on the calculation. We don't live in a perfect world, and I just think it's good to have this discussion. But I defer to your expertise and your comments, because I don't necessarily disagree with them.
Well, this is Jerry. I was just to expand on what Joe just said. If CMS desired to try to place high level of importance on patient safety and to avoid unintended consequences, it could use the quality incentive program to set a cap on this. So I think we should separate financial considerations as a separate issue, not to be commingled with our discussions about CPMs. I think we should focus on importance to measure for public reporting and quality improvement, and the financial considerations can be dealt with through other means in the system.
Yeah, and I appreciate your comments, and I don't know if Tom Dudley's still on the phone. Tom, do you have any comment?
Unfortunately,
You can't.
I can't. I do have my thoughts.
Okay, Tom, thanks.
I have my little opinion, but unfortunately, where we are with rulemaking, I cannot make any comments
okay.
at this point.
All right. Well, I'm glad you were able to listen. How's that?
No, it's a valuable conversation.
This is Jeff Burns. If I can make another comment, it may be a minor one, but I think one of the advantages of not having a performance measure in this regard is that it may open the door more towards doing the studies that need to be done, whereas having a performance measure sort of negates the need or may reduce the incentive for anybody to do the studies that we need to answer this question. It may not be an overwhelming reason to not endorse this measure, but at least in my own mind, it remains a consideration.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
Is the time for me to summarize and move on, or should we continue the discussion further?
I've said my piece, Peter.
Okay, thank you.
Peter.
Well, I thank the committee for really a good discussion. I think we've kind of touched on many aspects of how we decide this and what the criteria should be. And I think the sense of the committee is yes, we'd like to see the data that lowering serum phosphorus impacts mortality and morbidity. And when we do, you know, we'll be jumping out in front and saying there should be a national consensus standard on that. But short of that or other compelling quality arguments, we're going to hold fast where we are. Is that a reasonable summary?
I'm good with that.
I'm good with that, too.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Got it.
So what's next on the agenda?
Okay. Thank you, Peter. We will, there were a few other measures that were not recommended that CMS asked the steering committee just to reconsider. They are listed on the memo there, and I'll just pull that up quickly. Measures 1431, 64, 34, 35, and 32. We can go through these kind of one by one, or if there are any measures that kind of jump out at you here that you feel like there was some issues that came up in the comments that perhaps you want to bring forward to the committee again for reconsideration for endorsement.
Lauren, was that question for us?
Yes, that's for us.
Okay. Sorry about that. I'm daydreaming, I guess. Bob, can you speak to this for us, please?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, Bob. Yes.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. I was speaking on my phone. We sent rationales for each of these, and we believe that they are important, and if the committee has looked at any of those rationales and agrees, we would be delighted to clarify any further discussion or help with any further discussion if there are remaining questions about them. There are five of them there. I'm not going to try and make a general statement about them. I defer to the committee at this point.
It seems to me that the three related to sodium, we had a very poignant discussion about that issue in our in-person meeting, that we probably all believe that those are good things to do. It's the question about level of evidence that would be sufficient for a CPM.
I agree with that statement. We, even though in our hearts we believe in it, there's, again, very difficult to find the good, strong evidence for it.
And I just would like to ask the committee, are of these measures listed here, are there any rationales that you would like to review from CMS that we can pull up in the Excel spreadsheet?
Well, regarding standardized hospitalization, the number of days, 1464, I think it was the committee's sentiment that that measure, that metric is not appropriate for to be judged at the dialysis facility level. That once a patient's in the hospital, the dialysis facility has little or no control. And does the CMS rationalization address that point? Or Bob, you may be able to recall what you responded on that.
This is Bob Wolf. The two measures do reflect different measures of burden of disease on the patient. And there are differences in the types of hospitalizations that patients face, so that the total days in hospital captures a different or measures a different aspect of the hospitalization burden that the patient faces. We have carried out analyses, those have not been published, that suggest that about half of the variation in hospitalization amongst facilities is attributable to the dialysis facility rather than to the hospital. I will just state that as an informal piece of information which suggests the dialysis facilities actually do have a substantial component of attributability for hospitalization measures. And I say it's informal because we have not yet published it. And we do believe that this is an important issue about attributability. I will just give you that information for your own
And in that unpublished data, does that, you just mentioned hospitalization burden, does that go further and say the total days versus the total number of admissions? Does it break it down that way?
I'm not going to try and give that detail because the answer is each of them is attributable to the facility. What I don't know is whether they make independent contributions after the other is already accounted for.
We have not
answered that question.
Hey, Lauren, you want to go over and highlight the measure developer, the comment on this one? Yeah, there you go.
What I think Bob said, though, is maybe an important point, that if we are saying that we're holding dialysis facilities accountable for excessive hospitalizations, that may address and overlap with the same kind of things that would come out if we were holding them accountable for total number of days. And that by adding days, do we really add anything to the effectiveness of what we've done? It sounds to me like maybe not. And
yeah, I think that makes sense.
Does anybody else in the committee want to address these five measures? Questions to the developers or whether we should be reopening any of them?
Not me.
I think we've thoroughly discussed these at our steering committee meeting.
Yeah, I think I'm happy with our discussion. If Rick is, I don't know if he's in perpetual mute there, but if he could comment on the first one, that might be helpful. The iron stores for pediatric patients.
Right. This was an issue we addressed with, how appropriate this was in the measurement of the true stat of iron homeostasis. That got a couple of comments to it, didn't it, when this was sent out for review?
Right. And as you recall, the committee did recommend the measures of actually managing the iron, the use of iron therapy.
Right. I don't think there was anything to change on that. I mean, that was...
So that measure implies that iron stores have to be measured.
They do,
so,
yes.
So in a way, this is redundant to
preceding measure.
Yeah.
Preceding, right.
Well, we do measure the stores. I mean, that's part of the analysis that we data for. So would you want to change anything on this?
No? Okay. So hearing no other movement from the committee, I think we can move on to the next step in the agenda.
Okay. Towards the end of the in-person meeting that the steering committee had, there was a recommendation for a list of areas of performance gaps for future measure development for ESRD care. And as a result of the comment period, there were some additional topic areas that were for the steering committee to consider. So what we want to do is just kind of throw this out to the committee to see if, one, if you agree with these general topic areas, that they should be included in those future recommendations for measured development care, and or identify ones that should not be included or other topic areas that should be included that are not here. So are there any objections to these topic items or any clarification needed? I will ask the committee now.
This is the last paragraph of the document that was sent out. And
correct. I'll just pull this
and
up.
And the second one, prevention of catheter-related infections, was also in your response to the commenters, number 39, you're asking the steering committee that question. Should that be on the list, I think?
Correct.
And prevention of catheter-related infections and thrombosis be added as performance measured gaps.
Correct.
So,
This is Myra. On the antimicrobial resistance, should that just be limited to pediatrics? Because we're finding an increasing number of resistant organisms in our adult population as well.
That's a good point. At least, yes, right. That wouldn't have to be limited to pediatric.
And perhaps one of the things in terms of other immunizations, I know we're focusing on pneumovax, but as there are other vaccines in development, what's the role of those other vaccines in our ESRD population?
So what is your suggestion?
Particularly for shingles, because we have seen a few cases.
So you're saying we could add to the list appropriate use of vaccinations in ESRD patients?
Yes.
Okay. I think that sounds very reasonable.
I like that suggestion.
I'm kind of this is maybe more for my information, but what kind of metric could you have regarding resistance that would improve quality or help us monitor? Because that's a complex phenomena. Would we be saying by facility, how many resistant microbes came up, and what can we do about that? I'm not sure how that would work out.
So our issues are those that are coming from the nursing homes that are dialyzing in our units. I don't know if their level of routine antibiotic use at those facilities is higher, or that they're getting so many patients in and out of the hospital that they're getting colonized from all over the city. So I'm not certain if we can have a performance measure that's geared towards those high-risk patients, such as the nursing home residents, as opposed to having that then become part of our general antibiotic resistance pattern for our particular unit because other patients have been exposed to these other patients.
Mm-hmm. So what I may be hearing you saying is that the resistance problem isn't so much from behavior in the dialysis units. It may be prescription behavior in the hospital or at the
nursing SNPs. Home. And then we are now, if they're going to give us the responsibility of all these other hospitalizations, we don't have any control over that. And yet we're being, as that other measure above number 14, 64 for the standardized hospitalization rate show, being forced to, I guess, look at that as one of the things that we need to address.
This is Connie again. I guess I would have some concern that if it's not in the realm of the dialysis facility and we're really looking at outside of the dialysis facility, the antimicrobial resistance in nursing home patients or those that have been hospitalized, I would hate to see that as a measure that we are responsible for at the facility level.
well, perhaps the research should be geared so that we can show that we are not part of that problem, so that it would not come back to us.
Well, is there any research out there indicating that that antibiotic use in dialysis facilities is contributing to the antimicrobial resistance problem? And I have no idea. So
I can't say.
And I guess, yeah, right. I guess the question would be, are there, you know, what are the recommended practices for antibiotic therapy to prevent resistance, and are those being done in dialysis facilities? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that makes some sense as a possible metric that correct antibiotics are being prescribed. But man, that gets really complex, you know.
I guess is what I'm having trouble with, Peter, is that antimicrobial resistance is indeed a difficult problem, but it's often facility or region related, and to try to apply this then to a national policy and hold a dialysis facility in some way accountable to it is difficult.
Yeah, I agree. That's a big step.
It's an important problem, but it may not lend itself to a national CPM.
So I'm not comfortable saying that this should be on a list of steering committee recommended areas for research.
Okay.
Personally. Anybody else disagree?
No.
No, I agree.
And then on the other end of the list about the standard KTV, about all dialysis patients included, doesn't that go back to our pediatric population or not simply just little people? I mean, do we want to make sure that we always discriminate between a pediatric population?
Right.
Versus adult regs?
Right. I think any measure that could be, you would always want to at least always stratify so that you could get different results for the, you're right.
Yeah, so the way that reads makes me really pretty nervous about
it. Right. Okay.
So
there's a specific age group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but you would recommend using standard KT over V for adults and for pediatrics, right? But not to combine the results. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
I would agree. This is Rick. Definitely.
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely get that clarified or make that clear.
I think what we should do with this is, you know, we already have a list, I think, from our meeting of areas for consideration for future metrics, which is sort of a request list. The steering committee is sort of requesting the renal community to submit metrics on various topics. And so maybe, you know, we can combine what's left over from this list with our other list and send it around again to the steering committee. Because I, you know, there's some things that we would all agree we need research on, you know, but to say that we would think they're ready for submission as performance metrics may be a different thing. So maybe we should review them again before the final report goes out.
That's good. So we can do that, and then if anything else comes to mind, people can let us know as well.
I think it would be great if we there could somehow be some harmonization with whatever the CKD measures will be. Is there some issues like transplant and access to home dialysis that I don't really know how to address those in this domain, but which might be addressed in CKD?
So you're suggesting it would be appropriate to look at metrics that address availability of kidney transplant or home dialysis modalities to the list of needed metrics?
B,
be considered, I think. I don't know how those would be constructed, but
right.
To be considered. And then I guess what I'm really saying is there are a lot of what I think you do in the dialysis facility is you play catch-up because of what happened to the patient in the transition to ESRD. So I think that these two processes need to be integrated either by having the same committee members or by some kind of oversight because having these committees distinct and completely separate, I think, might not be the best way to approach this, but that's just my opinion.
Right. Well, in the prior list, we did include the transition things, and we'll do what Peter suggested, add these things and send that out to you again. And then, Lauren, you want to mention the renal project?
Sure. We are slated to start the renal endorsement maintenance project next week. And I do believe the majority of the current committee will remain on for the upcoming renal project. And we don't have an idea yet of the number or the volume of measures, but we certainly will get that out to the committee, and we will certainly forward the list of include this list of performance measure gaps in the call for measures so that the new measures coming in will hopefully be inclusive of these topics as well as reviewing the list of currently endorsed measures. So
for clarity, Lauren, the next generation of this committee will have two basic jobs. One is to review measures that were endorsed in the past.
Correct.
And decide whether or not they should get continued endorsement or not.
Correct.
And the second is a new group of submissions. And in that new group of submissions can be both metrics aimed at ESRD and metrics aimed at CKD.
Correct, as well as any other renal-related diseases out there besides CKD and ESRD.
That's really great. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, I'll just kind of quickly summarize. For the measures that were recommended, we have a few that will remain as is, and then for the others, we will follow up with CMS for clarification. For the measures not recommended, they will remain as they are, not recommended. The committee decided not to change their decision on the measures not recommended, and for the list of performance gaps for future measure development, we will review that list and circulate it back to the committee. Finally, I do believe we have to open the call for our...
Before we open that, I wanted to comment on three of your comment responses that I think we can handle real quickly. The comment number 116, very interesting, from the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, saying that they would like to see... comment, and I think we all would agree, you know, what is the proper way to be handling this, and what I thought you might include in your response is invite them to develop and submit such a metric.
Okay.
Because they're the experts on it, and they may be able to help us out. I don't know where else it's going to come from. Another, on comment number 83, you know, raised a question in my mind. You know, they're asking how can we calculate this, and how are we going to be able to use these metrics, and it raised a question in my mind. Once these metrics are approved and CMS is calculating them, how would, say, a health plan, a quality person, access the metrics and see how different dialysis facilities are doing? You know, are they going to have to calculate it themselves, or is CMS going to allow them to share the metric calculations with them?
So, Peter, could you say again what you want us to
ask? Okay, well, so what I'm asking is once these metrics are approved and CMS is doing them on a regular basis, will the metrics themselves be viewable by the public?
Tom, are you still on? I assume that you're planning to do a compare, or maybe you already have an ESRD facility compare website.
Yeah, we do have a dialysis facility compare, and that's the question about public reporting, correct?
So for these new metrics, that the that'll be added to facility compare?
Once there is sufficient data and we're comfortable with the validity of the data that's being in completeness, there's a probability that these measures, data for these measures would be reported on CMS websites.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, important that if we're doing this work and we're being sponsored by various healthcare entities and health plans and those who need to know, and we go through all this work. And so at the end of the day, they, as members of NQF, want to be able to see that these the outcomes of these.
Right.
And there's a strong push, you know, to be as transparent. And if we're taking the time to require providers to submit the data, we want to make it available.
Okay.
Okay. And my final, there's a, in one of your comments, I wanted to make a correction. This is in number 115, and in the response, it starts out with the sentence, almost all dialysis care is paid by CMS. I think that's not really accurate.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I've seen the slides, and there's probably data out there, what proportion of dialysis is paid for by CMS and how much is commercial and how much is others. And I think the proportion paid for by CMS is probably more in the range of 50% to 70%, and not something nearly all over states.
Yes, definitely. Okay, thanks. Do you know, and maybe...
I would check with CMS to get the numbers, though.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know the numbers offhand.
Okay, but Tom, that's something you would know or be able to find out.
Yeah, especially with the 30-month exclusion, commercial payers have to take on a much greater burden than they used to.
Okay. All right. Well, no, thank you very much.
So, Karen, from the USRDS annual data report, Alan Collins can give you an idea. I think he said at a meeting last week at NKF, somewhere around 70% is paid for by CMS and the remainder being paid by commercial insurance.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll check that. That's good. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Those are my comments. Andy, before we open it up, for NQF member and public comment, are there other leftover issues from the committee? Okay, well, let's open up the lines for public comment then.
Operator, if you can open all the lines, please.
All the lines are open.
Okay, are there any audience members that would like to make any other comments? Okay.
Wow, we silenced all the...
Karen, may I make a comment?
Yes.
It's Tom Dudley again. I appreciate on behalf of CMS, appreciate the time the steering committee has devoted to reviewing of the measures that we submitted. It's very valuable to us.
Well, thank you. And thank you to all the committee. And Lauren, you want to... talk about next steps. I know you've recapped what we need to do yet, but you want to just tell them what the next steps are?
More than likely, you all will be receiving an email from me just to kind of recap the call today and for any clarification on some of the things that we will go back to CMS for and get back to you on those. So you'll be getting something from me in the next week.
So do we anticipate any more needs for phone calls for this version of the committee?
No, I don't believe so. I think the things that we are going to follow up on are just to talk with CMS just about clarifying those denominators in relation to the home versus not home patients, and we'll just follow up with the committee on email. So after after we get these last few things clarified, the next step is to indicate any of these changes in that draft report, and it will go to the NQF membership for voting. And then from there it goes to the Consensus Standards Approval Committee and the board for endorsement. So unless some additional issues arise that we haven't already addressed, we shouldn't need another conference call.
Okay. Good. Well, let's take this opportunity to thank this version of the committee and for your time and focus and continue to watch the emails. There's going to be a few things we need to take care of. And I think that's it for today. We made it under 2 hours.
Excellent. Thank you all for your time and efforts, and we'll be in touch, as Lauren said, next week.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good weekend.